Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for the Driveway Liberty Podcast. The only podcast recorded live in a driveway. Hey guys, I'm your Uncle Wes, and I'm sitting here in the driveway with my good friends today. We'll introduce our guest here in just a moment. But I'm sitting here with my good buddy, Dan Matichacho, who we just had a yell fest on a previous cast, so we're still a little fired up, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny you mess up my name, because last year was Gianna's first year starting varsity.
Right.
First year, she was a freshman. She started as a freshman. And literally her home announcer mispronounced her name every time they announced her to come up to bat.
That's terrible.
So this year we have somebody who is doing the game announcing, who's actually good friends with the family and has
actually knows the last
whole
name.
Life. So
as I can pronounce your last name,
I know,
but I think
can.
It's a lot funnier if I mispronounce it. It's kind of that old Lloyd Bridges thing in Major League, or Hot Shots, or The Airplane, where he calls the guy a different name every time. Mm-hmm. Picked the wrong day to quit sniffing glue, you know, that kind of stuff.
So
I always think that's a personal thing. That's one of those little 20% things I do just for my own amusement.
You don't have to explain it.
No, I already have.
You just made
it's
me
too late.
You just made me think of it.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, that might help. All right, I did some things. So, all right, we've got our unpaid geological climate change expert, Dr. Wesley Ingram, on this, and I didn't call him McGriff today.
Yeah.
So I'm making progress. He's with us today. This is your third time on the show. Man, we appreciate you coming into town and sitting in the driveway and hanging out with us. How have you been?
I've been doing well. Just been staying busy, coming over here quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I was back over here in December, and now I'm back because talked about last time I bought that lot over down in the Forgotten Coast area.
Yeah, man, that's pretty country down there.
Yeah, it's real pretty. So I got a builder selected and finishing up all the house plans and ordering stuff, getting the lot all cleared and fixed up, and it's looking good, man. I mean, it's a great area over there.
So do you plan to move down here full time?
I'd like to. Yeah,
yeah, man.
I still got to keep a presence in Houston because my clients are there. I do most of my work there. I mean, that's oil and gas central for North America.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you want to get out in the Gulf and work on some of that stuff a little more often.
I used to do that years and years ago. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, that's the plan, is to, maybe keep an apartment or something there, but to move over here once the house and all that. I mean, it'll take more than a year.
Sure.
To get everything built and done. But yeah, I'd like to move over here. It's a beautiful area. And I'll tell you, when you get over there in Franklin County, too, one stoplight in Apalachicola.
Yeah.
Everything just like chills out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, weekends can get pretty hectic down there. But other than that, man, it's like old Florida. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, I'd be lying if I didn't say we were eyeballing some stuff down that way ourselves.
Yeah, it's pretty area.
It's similar to what this area used to be.
Yeah, way back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, we had more than one red light when I moved here, but we did have an actual off season here when I first moved here.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it was a lot, like at least half the restaurants closed in the off season.
Yeah. I lived on 30A when
right.
I moved here. And the off season, like literally from the end of August until right before Christmas, there was nobody here.
Right.
And I used to go, and I'd take my little six-pack cooler, go onto the beach with my surf fishing poles, put two or three of them out there, and I'd sit in my beach chair and kind of fished, you know, doing the lazy man fishing where you just throw them out there and wait till something grabs it.
Yeah.
And then drink my beers. And it was literally, I could look from eyesight to eyesight down each shoreline, and there's literally nobody there.
There.
Because I worked at the time I worked in retail for Home Depot, and it was a Tuesday afternoon when I was doing that.
Yeah.
And there was nobody on the beach.
Yeah.
And it was like 74 degrees, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Now, Nothing. You can't even get out there.
Yeah, you can get that Cape San Blas, St. George, like you were saying, it's a lot of that seasonal and weekend people, but on the off season or weekday, that's like that too. And there's actually, I haven't been out there. You got to have a boat, but there's, is it either Little St. George and then St. Vincent Island? There's nothing out there. Those are uninhabited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a great place if you got a boat, which I'll get eventually. I don't have right now, but I'll get a boat.
Yeah, it's we go over there a lot and do what's the not oyster? I'm sorry, cold meds have got me.
Are you talking about the scalloping?
Scalloping. Yeah. We go over to scallop season, man. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, St. Joe Bay. Yeah.
Yeah, get in the bay and just kind of. Spider-Man across the floor of the
we did that as the store manager outing for
did you really
for Depot
I want to all the store managers went out. I haven't done it yet, but I want to do that,
dude. It's a blast. It's a good time. It really is. We enjoyed it, even though we didn't get enough to feed everybody. We still had a good time doing it. I mean, it's like hunting for Easter eggs in the water.
See their eyes.
It's pretty funny. But anyway, man, all right, so since last time you've been on, you were telling us off air, been a few updates in the climate stuff. Go.
Sure. Well, I would say last time we covered the geologic time period, the way back.
You're right.
We covered the glacial, interglacial. We covered kind of the relationship between temperature and CO2, but that correlation is not causation. There's a huge problem there,
right?
The ice core record. So we don't need to go back on that. We've already talked about it.
Sure.
One thing we didn't really talk about is the very recent or the historical record. Just going back to the last 1,000 years or even a little bit before that, civilization. Roman times.
Sure.
The Bronze Age. There were known. And these are very well known in the scientific literature. If you look at recent paleoclimate, there's all kinds of papers on the Bronze Age warm period, the Roman warm period, and the medieval warm period is very well known, very well documented. And, as far as updates from last time, I think we touched on last time how about 1,600 scientists came out, signed that document, the Clientele, and there are a number of experts that are starting to come out now and say, hey, look, this is not consensus. There's a manufactured narrative here. And that's good to see.
That is good to see. I mean, because it takes a certain level of courage to do what you do, and other academics, or whether applied or in theory, to come out and say, you know what, man, we need to start questioning this stuff, mm-hmm. especially given that the big money is behind the opposing view,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They want that answer, and there's a lot of money and influence and political pressure behind it. And, when you're in that field, when you're academia, and, they want to give out all the awards to all those people, hyping global warming, everybody can see that. Everybody notices that. And so they want to be on the in crowd. They want to get the awards, be ingratiated, get the money, get the funding. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling thing. And we touched on that a little bit last time, too.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing I guess I could touch on, just I did a cast on this a little while back on my little Rumble podcast. One thing that anybody can really understand is not only anecdotal evidence from the historical record, but there are studies that were done in Scandinavia, Northern Europe, where they did something very simple.
Right.
They just looked at tree lines. Okay. And you look at, you go to like a mountainous area today, there's a tree line. If it's warmer, the tree line will be higher.
Sure.
If it's colder, the tree line will be lower.
Right.
And that will move through time. And when those stumps and those old trees die, they'll still be there.
Sure.
And there's actually something called a tree ring chronology.
Yeah.
That you can splice all these different records together and you can line them up, because each year it's kind of like a timestamp or a barcode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At the grocery store. You can line those up and you combine that with carbon 14 dating.
Sure.
Interspliced along that whole record to kind of basically just march your way back through time. And so what you can actually do is you can track those tree lines, and a very well done study did this in Scandinavia,
right?
All across Sweden, Finland, Norway. And it's also been done in Siberia, other northern hemisphere, high latitude areas. And what they found is that medieval warm period, tree lines were clearly higher than they are today. Now they've gone down and then they came back up, but they have not even gotten back to previous elevation levels in those higher latitudes
right.
that they were in the medieval warm period. And these studies that I read, they were very meticulous. They dated it. They showed exactly where those stumps were. And you could find the old, fossilized tree stumps that are well above the tree line of what they are today. And that was about 1,000 years ago, medieval period.
So basically, in layman's terms, that just absolutely proves that the climate was actually warmer during that time frame, 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 1,000 years ago. Yep.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, and then I actually have since also gotten on X, and I'll get into it sometimes a little bit with these people and back and forth. And I've learned that what their quick counterpoints are, and they'll come back and they'll always say, "Oh, well." The medium warm period, that was just regional. That was just Northern Europe. So they've come around the idea that's like, well, we can't deny this. There's so much evidence and data out there. Right. But then they try to like
dismiss it based on a region.
Yeah. But here's the interesting thing. I was like, okay. So I searched around, tried to find some other papers and information. Turns out the medieval warm period does not look like it's a localized Northern Europe thing. There are records also in the Himalayas area.
Right.
And these studies used what they call palynology,
right.
which is basically fossilized pollen that gets collected in sediments or lake sediments in different places. This was another high altitude location in the Himalayan region, the Zimu Glacier. And they dug trenches and they did sediment core pits around these things. And they reconstructed the palynology, and they can tell when it was warmer based on the assemblage of the pollen,
right.
the trees that were growing at that time. They could tell that, yes, there were these species growing at higher latitudes during about 1,000 years ago, medieval warm period. And that's just one location. The study also showed that there's numerous other locations in East Asia.
Right.
I haven't seen as much in South America, but pretty much from Siberia all the way across to Europe and South Asia, India, Himalayas, Southeast Asia, you've got records that say, no, yep, it was warmer.
Yeah, so but it's easy to assume to come to the conclusion that if that data span that large landmass in the Northern Hemisphere, that it would be applicable to the rest of the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's not a jump.
No, it's just funny how they just try to dismiss it. They just, oh, well, no, that was only in, Iceland and Greenland
because
in Northern Europe.
Most people don't know the details of the argument, so right. it's easy. So if somebody like me listened to you give that information, and then I'm arguing with somebody on X, they say that. I don't have that counterpoint because I don't have the background that you have. That's why they do those kind of things.
Yeah.
They're not battling you. Because you can disprove all of it because of your education. They're battling the consensus of
yeah.
the layperson. And that's why they do those kind of things.
And I see that on X. I see a bunch of people that are on the left side. They're just trying to be loud. Mm-hmm. And they're just repeating. I've noticed that they're just repeating talking points.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they don't.
Yeah, that's right. all they do.
That's all they do. If you challenge them on it, and then they'll attack you.
So, yeah, they go straight ad hominem, immediately. They attack you. They attack your character. They come up with some sort of debate fallacy. That's a cheap shot. Mm-hmm. They play dirty mm-hmm. pool. They don't speak to your argument because your argument is just dispelled at their cognitive bias is. So they attack you.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately.
Mm. Oh, speaking of X, I got to tell you one that was, this was rich. This, I almost like lost it because it was just so stupid. I could hardly deal with it. But this guy he was obviously a troll shit poster or leftist guy or whatever. But he was trying to say that, oh, we got to be really concerned about the fossil fuel burning because it's going to consume up all the oxygen in the atmosphere and we're going to asphyxiate and die. And I'm like, I almost didn't even want to engage.
There's a magical device out there. Dan's got one in his front fucking yard.
But you know what I'm talking about? It's like that level of ridiculousness.
I can just look and see, I don't know, 100 of them.
Yeah. There's these things that squirrels live in that are natural filters for that thing. Let's plant a few more of those if you're concerned.
Remember when the argument was we're killing the rainforest and we're destroying the trees and that's going to destroy humanity?
Yeah.
Like it changes so much. It's unbelievable.
No, it's bobbing and weaving, man. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. And we do... Not everybody on the right, as I've found out in the last week.
Yeah, a lot.
But most logical, right-minded, or liberty-minded, I should say, individuals use logic and reason to come to their conclusions. And they use that to point out the flaws in the opposition argument. And then they bob and weave. Oh, okay.
But you're
a skinny asshole. You're a fat ass.
Just look at they changed global warming to climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because global warming is easy to disprove.
Acid rain, global warming, climate change.
Yeah. Peak oil. I mean, go through the whole freaking. Yeah.
Oh, there's a meme on that. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was like 1970s, coming ice age. You know, the next one, global warming. Now it's actually global boiling. Now I've heard some guys on the UN coming out saying global
boiling.
The oceans are gonna boil and we're gonna cook.
My last corporate gig, I was in the insurance industry, property and casualty.
No.
Yeah, I've mentioned that before. If the oceans were rising, we could not get insurance on our properties here in Florida.
Yeah, and you couldn't get a mortgage on a freaking...
You couldn't get a mortgage because the underwriters are going to view that as a risk. Oh, it's going to be flooded in 20 years. We're not lending you money on this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to get flooded. We're not writing you insurance for your... We're not writing you a flood policy.
Yeah, it's absurd.
That...
And why would you buy that property if it was going to be... literally worthless.
The biggest nerds on the planet are mortgage underwriters and insurance.
And they're really fucking good at their job.
And they're very really good.
Like Nostradamus.
You're talking about predicting tragedy? Those sumbitches can predict tragedy with great precision.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. They have the maps that show where the hurricanes hit, the probabilities, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, they've got, if anybody has it down to a science, it's those two group of individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think we touched on this last time, too, but... you know, I've known for a long time that there's a lot of hysteria in the whole global warming thing. And yeah, they did use language and shift it to climate change so they can try to be right on both directions. But really what you learn when you get into it is it's a grift. And you look at people like Bill Gates, you look at the World Economic Forum, you look at the Club of Rome, you look at all these guys, you know, they own properties right on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they are... You know, what's his name? John Kerry has made millions off of the whole green agenda. And so it's
Al Gore. Yeah. Al Gore has made a shit ton.
That's right. Al Gore, too. Yeah, all of them. So it's a grift for these guys.
Yeah.
And but there is an agenda behind it. That almost to me has become more interesting than the climate thing. I mean, yeah, I mean, I can talk about
what
that.
Is the purpose? Why? I mean, yeah, I mean, and it's conspiratorial to a degree, but what is the, why? That's always my go-to question. Why? Why are they trying to propagate this false narrative?
Well, I think the end goal is control.
Yes.
Power.
Yeah.
Yep. Control over the people. So whether that's through a carbon tax or limiting your ability to be mobile, by going electric cars that they could turn off at any time during an emergency, all these kind of things all play into the powers that be, whatever they are. I know I say that a lot.
Yeah.
The cabal, whatever it is, those people, and it's not like they sit in a room and figure this out. I think this is just a collective mindset that kind of grows And well, you don't have to sit in a room. You don't have to be a power hungry person on this side of the earth and a power hungry person on this side of the earth. You don't have to meet to figure out. I'm sorry, I'm banging the microphone. You don't have to meet to come up with these things.
Right.
They become almost organic as you influence people, and then you set the useful idiot population by manipulating them on each other.
Well,
and then
their,
you end up what you have.
They do have their think tanks and their nonprofits.
Oh, sure.
And that is, I've learned, that is the vehicle or the mechanism by which they push their agenda. Mm-hmm. And that's so, really how they do it.
So I guess a bigger picture question, we talk about the why. Mm-hmm. We kind of understand. And if I think the consensus at the table here is that it's power.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you combat that? How do we gain power of knowledge and facts? How do we propagate that information in a productive way that combats what they're doing?
I think that's the previous cast that we talked about, our frustration with the way our government does things. And
because their PR campaign and marketing is just brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think there's parallels to how you combat it. First of all, you have to factually combat that information. You have to do it with facts and data, etc. But that doesn't reach everybody.
No.
Especially when your reach is so small.
You start talking about these are the facts and people's eyes glass over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they've come to their conclusions and the cognitive bias is so very entrenched. Strong. I mean, it's easier to fool somebody than it is to convince them they've been fooled. I mean, we've seen the memes. Mm-hmm. We've seen the philosophers say that. We've said that on this program. How do you plant that seed of doubt that is healthy? Doubt and questioning is a healthy process in science. It's a healthy process in politics. It's a healthy process in normal conversation.
But they've diluted that out of society through education, et cetera. They don't.
And shame.
They don't allow doubt. Yeah, shame. However they do it, whether it's through education, through manipulation, through advertising, media, movies, shows, all these things. And then you roll into what you're talking about, shame, where you have the useful idiots are going to attack the person who doesn't agree with them. But that person's got all the facts behind them.
I'm going to throw this out there and see what you guys think about this.
Sure.
But I think to your point, how do we combat this? And then recognizing that their propaganda arm for whatever you want to call it, the left, the media, the government globalist complex, whatever you want to call it, is so powerful and so strong that I don't think you can turn it around everywhere at this point. I think the big blue cities in America and places like Europe, Western Europe, those big cities and those areas, they're going to get hurt by this. We're going to see more unrest. We're going to see more disorder, chaos, rioting, and all of the psychological warfare is really what it is. I mean, they're making people angry on both sides. They're getting really pissed off. There's a lot of stuff the news doesn't even cover.
Sure.
The farmers just like getting really pissed and rioting almost every weekend now.
Sure.
Over
they're riding tractors in the town squares over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people are pissed and that's going to continue. It's my view now that, you know, since we've last talked, been a few months, I'm seeing things get crazier and crazier. I don't think you're going to stop that train in the high populated areas, the Democrat controlled and the globalist controlled areas. I think it's going to get crazier.
It's going to get worse before it gets better. Well, then that begs the question. The next step is, as free thinkers, how do we protect ourselves from that?
The issue, they're fighting this on a multi-front. This is a multi-front war for them. So they're doing this in the population centers. They're also regulating farmers into bankruptcy. They're buying, and then they buy the farmland that they bankrupt them out of.
So you got to eat crickets.
To the point where the people who are not living in these population centers can't live. That's where we're headed.
Yeah.
So you can't just, it's not like your kid where you say, all right, well, you want to touch the stove, go ahead and touch it. Because that's like telling your kid, well, you want to run out in front of a car, go ahead and run out in front of a car. You're not, the lesson ends with you dead.
Yeah.
Like you can't treat it that way. So there's got to be some kind of.
It seems like it's inevitable. We'll all be in jumpsuits and woke up at 6 a.m. to go out and watch the big screen.
Freaking 1984. Yeah. It's going to be real.
Well, I think it's going to be more geographical or localized than that. I think over the next few years, as we get closer to 2030, I don't believe that they're going to achieve their full Great Reset, but I think they're going to do a lot of damage trying to get there. And that's what we're already...
Which might end up being worse in the end.
Yeah, yeah. But I think certain parts of the economy... I think we're looking at probably, certainly a recession, maybe worse than that. Maybe even what they call an inflationary recession, where...
Well, if they didn't manipulate the numbers, you can argue that we've been in that.
Oh, yeah.
We've been heading that way at least.
Yeah. So in some ways, they're getting what they want, but they're also... Regular people are starting to wake up now. I mean, even some of these people in some of these cities, when you've got these 10 million illegal aliens coming across and they're coming in and they're murdering Americans, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't hide behind that. Unless you're just living in a basement.
The problem is, though, one of the things that we studied when I was working on my political science degree is public memory. Problem with it is so short. And we see that with the fact that you already see people talking about all the great things that Biden has done. That's the narrative going into the election.
Well, that's how Biden can sell that he just reduced inflation by X number of percent or gas prices are going down. Yeah, but like you inflated them so much based on your policies that they are going down technically. But they're still way above before
where
you
they
took
were.
Over. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. The public memory is
and the
so
ability
short.
For people to adapt. That's the other thing. Is humans can adapt really well. So when things go to shit, it hurts for a while, but you eventually figure out how to live in that environment.
Right. And so when there's any relief,
it's blown up.
It feels way bigger than it mm-hmm. absolutely is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that point, let's take a break because I need to pee.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back. I think I'm going to do a beer review because I've been drinking beer, even though I said I wasn't. And then we'll be right back right after this.
Hey, guys, it's Wes. I want to thank you so much for helping our podcast grow. We are so excited about the growth we've experienced in our listenership this year, and we're very excited to be able to now offer sponsorships for liberty-minded business owners right here on our podcast. So reach out to us. You can contact me directly at wes@wesherndon.com, or you can go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ The Driveway Liberty Podcast. Send us a message, man, if you're interested. We'd love to have you as a sponsor. And maybe if you're local or nearby, we can actually shoot a podcast directly at your business. Either way, let's get back to the broadcast.
We're not doing a beer review. Sorry, I went straight into
beer review.
No beer review. So, hey, guys, normally we would do a beer review here, but it's the middle of the day and we're trying to be responsible adults. Except me, I'm actually drinking beer.
I absolutely can't.
But I've got a cold, and I'll be going straight to bed for a little while at least when I leave here today. So we've got our good friend, our unpaid geological climate change expert, Dr. Wesley Ingram, on the cast with us today. If you're just joining us, if you are just joining us, it's pretty stupid to fast forward all the way to the 30-minute point and listen in.
All the syndicated radio stations were on.
Right, yeah, absolutely. So before the break, we were talking about what is the solution, how do we combat this misinformation that is so prevalent from the left? And you said you might have some ideas on that.
Yeah, I've got some ideas, and we were talking about how this propaganda, globalist, leftist kind of symbiotic nexus, if you will, is extremely powerful. They do control the media. There's even controlled opposition. I mean, all the stuff that comes out of corporate news, you know, you have to question that.
Right.
So we know that that's happening now at this point. That's clearly obvious. But some of the solutions, I mean, if you come to the conclusion like I have that the federal government is pretty bad right now, like really bad. The corruption, the dysfunction, everything that's going on is going to be really hard to turn that around.
Right.
And so I've come around to accepting that. I said, well, what can you do? What are solutions? And I do think you focus on a few things. You focus on your location, your geography, being in the right area. Also focus on local, focus on your local state politics, your local politicians. You know, make sure they're not globalist.
Right.
And also there's this decentralization push. So the more you concentrate money and power higher and higher into a single entity, the more likely it is that it will be corrupted, because it's just so much money and power. And, you know, it's like watching those TV shows like the Game of Thrones or whatever it might be. Everybody's like trying to be the one in power, right? Everybody wants to be the king, or everybody wants to have the money and the power. Well, if you decentralize that and you break that up, you know, you give up some things, but then you gain more liberty or more checks on that power.
Well, it's like we were talking about in a previous cast. Let's just all stop paying taxes. Mm-hmm. You just cut off the flow of wealth to the powerhouse that seems to be controlling everything. But the problem with that is the government is not the only entity controlling things. So you have to, if you're talking about decentralization, that would require us to, in essence, have to pay more, because we would have to do business with local businesses. Put our money where our mouth is.
That's exactly right. I think we do need to put our money where our mouth is. I think boycotts, and not just boycotts, but boycotts, the flip side of that. You know, if there's a conservative, family-based, you know, whatever, a traditional valued company.
Well, we were talking in the break about supporting, you know, I mean, it seems like every artist out there or creative is a leftist. And we as conservatives, and I'm not saying this because I'm a conservative musical artist, but I kind of am, is we don't seek out those individuals who are like-minded in us to us in all avenues of where we spend our time, money, and effort. You know, buy food from the local conservative farmer's market or the mm-hmm. farmer. Buy your meat from a local farmer who you know votes similarly to you. Mm-hmm. You at least libertarian or liberty minded, not libertarian minded. You know, consume conservative music. Find an artist. There are creatives out there who are liberty minded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Support them with your dollars,
right?
Because that, when it comes to the corporate leftist, you know, that big whole amoeba mob of power, the one thing that they do answer to is money. That is what they care about.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Bud Light and some of those things, when they started to get hit in the pocketbook, they started to back off. And you talk about, you know, BlackRock and ESG, that's taking a hit. Some of these states are pulling their pension funds out of ESG and
Florida being one of them. Yes.
Yeah. And that's good. And so that gives me hope, kind of like what we were talking about before. I think there's going to be further damage in these blue states and these blue cities. It's going to break down. Society's probably going to break down further in those areas. But if you are conservative leaning, you've got a family, you've still got the means and the ability to do it, I think you do need to start looking at your geography, where you're at.
Yeah.
And you do want to be in a state that's pushing back against this globalist green agenda, all that. And I don't think you want to be in a big city at this point. I'm getting out of Houston. Houston's fine. Houston's not New York, but I don't want to be in a big city 5 years from now if things start just getting degrading and getting worse and worse.
Right.
And it's going to take work. You're going to have to actually consciously make these decisions, and it's it's not going to be as easy as just think of your cell phone carrier. Mm-hmm. Like you go with Patriot Mobile as opposed to, you know, AT&T, et cetera. Like, so there may not be the same packages, et cetera. You may not have an unlimited type. Like things will change for you. Mm-hmm. You're going to spend a little bit more on going to that local farmer for the food.
You got to get out of your comfort zone. You got to challenge yourself
what,
a little bit.
Yeah. What have you ever had in your life that's worth anything that didn't take some work to get?
That's right.
Is something that you're going to have a mindset change and work on it.
Yeah. And you mentioned something else that made me think of something. You mentioned like the, what'd you call the company that did the cell phone?
Patriot Mobile.
AT&T. Well, that, in a lot of ways, that could be severely disrupted by Starlink and new technology coming up. I mean, there are things now where you can talk on your phone over signal. You just have an internet connection or a Wi-Fi. You don't even have to have cell service. I mean, things are going to happen in the next few years. I believe there are going to be large technological disruptors. And I'm glad that we have guys like Elon Musk. I know some people have mixed feelings about Elon Musk, and there's some good, maybe some bad there. Maybe there's some weird things going on with his Neuralink, but I like the guy, and he is a disruptor, and he is bringing in new technology. And what he did to take over X was pretty big for speech. But there are other things happening in that decentralization versus over centralization that are happening in the crypto space, for example.
Right.
And that's a disruptor. Now, there's the whole concept of don't be evil versus can't be evil, right? And that goes to that big tech thing. Remember Google used to say that like years and years ago, like, oh, don't be evil. Well, they ended up being evil.
Yeah, they were
using their power to control, do everything that they did. And so the one thing that's interesting about this blockchain technology, not necessarily just cryptocurrency or all that, there is a lot of hype and people just wanting to get rich off of that. But when you really get into the ethos of
Bitcoin, removes the Fed. In crypto.
It's got good things behind it. And even just outside of the Bitcoin and the crypto, blockchain itself can be used to this concept of can't be evil, because when it goes out, it's native to the internet, it's immutable. Once you create a block or a record of something, you can't go back and change it.
Right.
And so it takes away some of the ability for these powers to be to control everything. And I am a Bitcoin. I am pro Bitcoin. I have a little bit of Bitcoin, and I look to gain more because I think what's coming, not only is there going to be this social, political disruption, but I think we're heading towards financial and economic problems, because every government in the past in history that's had access to a printer or the ability to create more money, they always do it. They always do it. They always go into more debt.
Yeah, don't we know it?
And that's just what they're going to do. It's like having the playbook, knowing what they're going to do, and so you prepare for it. And I'm not telling people, I mean, not financial advice. I'm not telling anybody to go out and buy Bitcoin, but I'm saying it is an option. It is a escape hatch.
It's a hedge. Yeah.
It's a hedge. And if some people don't like that, they don't trust it, that's fine. You know, get yourself some hard assets. Get some gold and silver. You know, prepare, because it's my view that we're going to see some pretty wild swings in the financial markets. We're going to see it's going to go higher than people think. It's going to go lower than people think. We're going to see volatility.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. And I'm not, obviously we're not giving financial advice here, but if you think about the idea behind trade, and by trade, I'm not talking about us trading with China or I'm talking about you and I trading with one another. And obviously, you know, if you go back to the original societies, it was a barter system. Yeah. I had a chicken, you had some meat from the cow you just butchered. I'll trade you a chicken for some meat. So, it is intrinsic value. I mean, a piece of paper, you think about a dollar bill. It's only valued what the government says it is, whereas if we're trading crypto or gold or silver or this Swagatron that Dan didn't sell in his yard sale. You know, there's a kid out there who would trade you a bicycle for that Swagatron. There, I mean, you know, you if you use that mindset, and I'm trying to make a point, and I hope I can get to it through these cold meds. You've got to think outside of the box between green money and coin money. And I agree with you. I think we are headed towards, and I don't know at what degree, but an economic collapse of some sort. It may be a small one. It may be a large one.
I think it's by design.
Oh,
I think they're doing it to get us in a subservient
Well,
they're doing it to get us in a, we're going to have a digital currency.
Oh, yeah, that's coming. Yeah,
is coming, and it might come in the next 2 years. Yep. And then they're going to be the biometric form of that, them putting a chip or whatever, call it a barcode, call it whatever you
you're
want.
Already seeing the
ability
things.
For you to be able to, you know, stick your wrist or your palm in front of a reader.
They're doing that in China already.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, that's coming.
Oh, it's,
that
it's
is
here.
Literally going to be what's going to happen. They're going to crash the dollar to the point where the only escape
is that
they're going to sell is that system.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem, reaction, solution, create the crisis, offer the solution. Yeah, absolutely. Regarding the palm readers, they're already here. They're in Houston. I went into one of those nice little areas, part of Houston, one of the Whole Foods there. And they, damn if I didn't see people going in there, young people thinking it was cool.
Face recognition.
Scanning their hand.
Biometric. You do with your phone.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's cool. All right. I'll use my cash. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, well, now they have a record now. Personal record of you and what you buy.
Oh yeah. They want that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when they have the digital currency, they'll be able to control.
Yeah.
The whole social credit score stuff, all that stuff is coming.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's coming.
And
more control the government's going to have over.
And to my point earlier, I don't think we're going to be able to 100% stop that. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a section of the population, a group of people that will be captured by that. And these people will probably be, they won't have a lot of money. They might be a lot of immigrants or, you know, from wherever. And they're not going to know any better. And they will be brought into these cities. They'll probably be offered UBI, universal basic income, in exchange for using digital currency.
Sure.
And that's how they'll get some marginal adoption for this. But here's the thing, though. Here's the rub. Human beings don't want to be controlled like that. Human beings want to be free. I mean, they tried to do this in
Nigeria. But a corollary to that is they also don't want to have to think.
That's true, too. And there is a problem with that. There are a lot of people that are willing to give up their rights and freedoms in exchange for security and
simplicity.
Money, simplicity. And there is a segment of the population that will fall into that. You're not going to stop that. But they did try to launch the digital e-Naira in Nigeria, and it didn't go so well. In fact, their adoption was single digits. It wasn't very good at all. The government was annoyed by that, and so they started limiting, you know, cash that you could pull out of ATMs. And I think we'll get to that eventually in certain locations and states and cities. Well, they will limit cash. They will try to do whatever they can do to push people into this system.
They're going to do it. Yeah. They're going to do it behind an emergency.
And I'm going to call this right now. They're going to sell you on the fact that, well, we could save so much money in the federal government if we didn't have to print and remove currency from society.
The cost of ink has gone up so much.
Yeah. That's going to be one of the selling points.
Yeah. Yeah. But how do you get all the people, though, in the rural areas that are starting to prepare for this? I mean, I think the urban-rural divide is just as big as, if not bigger,
I think it's growing.
Between the states.
It's absolutely growing. Look, my own mom in her 70s is a prepper. She has a storage building filled with Mylar bags filled with grain and rice and Advil and Band-Aids and other things that I'm not going to mention on the air to call her out about. She is prepped.
Yeah. I've got friends that are prepping now that weren't just a few years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, people are seeing it. They're seeing the chaos.
We have a neighborhood plan. we're not going to disclose that, but we have a neighborhood plan. Several of us in the neighborhood,
we have
some key people in the neighborhood who are prepped, and I mean, not to level my mom is with a warehouse or a small warehouse filled with stuff, but we've
talked to each other about their expertise, who brings this to the table, who brings this to the table, you know, whether it's gardening or defense, and you know,
that's good.
Yeah,
we haven't had super organizational conversations, which I think maybe we need to start.
Maybe we do
have the meetings, but
you're already, if you're doing that and you have a little bit of stored food, or maybe you have some gold or silver or something, you're already, if things really do fall apart, you're already better off than still probably 80%.
Yeah, well, my expertise is I grew up rural. I've hunted, fished. And I don't need to go to Bass Pro Shops to get the stuff I need to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
We've got to, well, he just moved out of the neighborhood, so we got to find a new defense guy.
Well, there's a couple other ones too.
But, you know, it's, and some of us may have some legacy seeds for planning. You know, I mean, we will survive. And then there are others. I lost mine in a tragic boating accident, who have enough ammunition to take whatever else we need.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's a good thing to do.
Keep what you have.
Or keep what you have, primarily, yeah.
And that's, I'm probably not going to go full on prepper. I'm not quite there yet, but I do want to get out of the cities. I think Northwest Florida is a good place to be. And there are others. I'm not trying to tell everybody out there, come here, because there's lots of good places you can go. But I chose this area for not just that reason. I think it's a beautiful area too. Good climate, good place to live, good people. But I think you're going to see more of this in America. You're going to see people voting with their feet. You're going to see a bifurcation of things. You're going to see people on the left consuming what they want, because all their cognitive bias and all that. And you're going to see people on the right that are probably going to, you know, we talked about music and entertainment. You know, what if, you know, places like Nashville become, you know, the folk country new music for people of that political leaning. And then the people on the left, they still like their Hollywood and their leftist people.
Well, Nashville is going pretty left, but yeah.
Nashville?
The city of Nashville, yes.
Really?
Yes.
That's shocking.
Yeah.
That shocks me to hear that.
Yep.
Wow.
They're invading everywhere.
I thought Tennessee was pretty good, because a friend
predominantly of mine, Tennessee is.
Yeah.
Nashville itself is not.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of like upper New York is pretty conservative, but the city of New York is not.
Hmm.
And that's where the majority of the voting base is. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's their whole game. I think we talked about this last time. Control the population centers, control the political apparatus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's been their long-term plan. I think they've been doing this for years. I think they know what they're doing. I mean, these globalists, these leftists, they're quite smart. They have control over the media apparatus. They control the propaganda. So what we're really fighting also is a segment of the population that is, they are heavily indoctrinated. I see it on X all the time. I don't know quite how to deal with that, because you try to combat it with facts and information and, you know, objectivity or logic, and
they didn't hear it on the big rectangle in their living room, then it ain't true.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really bad. It's really bad. Yeah, and I've just learned to disconnect with those people. I used to have those battles on social media. Now I don't even fight those fights anymore, because those people can't be reached. They can't be reasoned with.
Yeah, they're already gone. Yeah.
Yeah, and you end up in a degenerative conversation to which you're battling them. Like you talked about earlier, where they just start insulting you and
they're attacking you personally or some way. Like, you know, I mean,
I don't even deal with that anymore.
You know, I'm a big guy, so if somebody attacks me and or you're a fat ass. Okay, cool. I won this debate. That's the way I look at it. Because you want, number one, went for the low hanging fruit. That's the easy insult. Go after something better, like my receding hairline or my graying beard, something like that. Don't, you know, obviously I've hit a nerve if you're attacking me personally. That's the way I look at that these days, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's,
You're right. When they come down to that, you have won.
You've won the debate.
Yeah, that's true.
And anything else from that point forward on my side is futile, other than to make fun of them for being stupid enough to go to that route.
Yeah. And I'm coming around kind of what you were talking about. Like, I don't even want to engage with these people. It's like, okay, fine. Go consume more of your propaganda. Take 10 boosters. Go live in a liberal city that's in chaos.
Get your myocarditis and just, I don't want to say fall dead, because I see this in some of the Facebook groups.
And right before you die, you can remember I said, I told you so.
Right. Yeah.
But it is, it is interesting. I see that kind of people on the right, kind of myself included, kind of coming around to that. It's like, okay, you try to wake people up, but if they're just insane, doubling, triple, quadrupling down on insanity, it's like, okay, you know, go do you. Go live in Chicago and
it's, you know, like it, the people who are still out there talking about the, you know, getting their booster or wearing masks and that, they're still talking about that now as a means of mitigation on whatever's out there.
You're insane.
You are lost.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I don't even want to even engage with you. You're gone.
Yeah.
To the point.
And what I was talking about earlier is like, I don't even want to live around those people. Like,
yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't want to associate with those people at all. Mm-mm. I mean, I left what is a local conservative, supposedly a local conservative group, because the cognitive bias on a certain subject has gotten to such a degree that logic is not, I don't want to be involved in conversations where logic is not the ultimate goal.
Yeah. Or a deciding factor in your thought process.
I'm always willing. And I welcome somebody pointing out why I'm wrong from a logical perspective. That's how I formed my current ideology over time. That is how.
Well, you did it earlier in the previous cast where we talked about that guy was retiring.
Yeah.
And I took it as he's retiring. Why? Like his process is hurting the party.
Yeah.
And then you brought up an idea of like, well, maybe he's helping the party because
he's preventing somebody from being appointed. Democrat
from being appointed, et cetera. And then when you go and actually get the bigger picture, you realize that's
not how it works in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, yeah, the guy's actually hurting the party. So why would somebody, I'm back to my original question. Why is somebody do that? Why are you hurting the thing you're supposed to represent?
But we've talked about this. The only good principle that Karl Marx brought to the table was the idea of a thesis versus an antithesis and come to a consensus. You have two opposing views, and you logically consider and debate those two views, and then you come to a consensus.
The problem is not always
an either or.
No, I understand.
Sometimes there's a middle ground.
We're talking about people that can't function in that environment. These people can't logically debate. They're not going to. You said it, like when you get to the point where their bias, their issue is they lose. Their premise is no longer what it was.
Well, they don't care about what objective reality is. They don't consensus.
There's no consensus. They just continue to fight in a different way.
Yeah, they refuse to
let logic win the day.
I agree.
Those people are lost, and we have a shit ton of those people in our society, which is contributing to the downfall of it.
Yeah.
Which is why we're having these conversations about the idiots who say that their house is going to be underwater in 20 years and they got a 30-year mortgage and they think the bank's going to give it to them. Like these people are not smart.
But getting back to what we were talking about earlier about when you reach someone or you come across someone that's like that, they are so far off in consuming all the propaganda that you can't reach them. You know, you have to spend your energy on people that are more reasonable.
Well, it's like in management, you've got the 80-20 rule. All right, you got the 10% at the top that are just performing no matter what you do, they're going to knock it out of the park every time. They're going to perform at the best possible level. They're going, these are
with self, or without you.
Or without you, these are self-motivated people.
Yep.
Then you got the 10% at the bottom that no matter what you do, you can crack a whip, you can provide carrots or whatever, and they're going to be shit every time. So your productive energy is at that 80% in the middle, where you can actually impact that performance to help it be better. Now, I would venture to say, when it comes to political matters, matters of ideology, matters of political philosophy, that's more of a 50-50 rule. You got 25% at the top who are logical thinkers and reasoners, and you've got 25% at the bottom that no matter what you do or say or point out how their logic is flawed or how wrong they are. From a philosophical standpoint, there's nothing you can say that's going to influence their opinion.
Yeah.
So to your point, you concentrate on that 50% in the middle. Now, there's the bottom part of that 50% who are much more difficult to sway than the top or the upper portion of that 25%.
And the other thing is, we've got to realize that number, whatever it is, the 25%, the 10%, the 50%, whatever it is.
I mean, and those are arbitrary percentages.
They're never going
just throwing those out.
No, but that group, that population is never going to help you get to where you want to be.
Right.
So whatever issue it is, they're not going to bring you, you're not going to use those people to bring you towards your solution.
Right.
You'll never get to them.
Right.
So don't spend any time with them because it's literally a waste of time.
No, but you need to drop a parting gift, which is, you're a fucking idiot. I'm moving on.
And sometimes, but there's also some value to using that as a practice dummy.
No, it helps you sharpen your own logic. I mean, it really does. There is some value, very little, but some value to debating idiots.
And you can make the argument it's better debating somebody who's educated. That way,
the flaws
are real, and they're not going to debase you in order to make their point. They're going to show you.
I am one of those weird individuals, especially when I am 95% sure that I am correct, who wants somebody to point out where I'm not. Make me think about my own position. Please, I want that. I thirst for that.
Yeah.
Because I realize that I am a flawed individual. We all are. And I want to, the quest for knowledge is greater than my quest to be, or my desire to be correct. Now, I also realize through self-analyzation that I'm an anomaly in that case. I mean, I'm not alone, but most people don't want to be shown they are incorrect.
Are shallow.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. That most people do not like that. They usually get emotionally triggered.
Well sometimes, but then I will sit down and I'll think about it and like, in all honesty, I'll say this on Facebook when I'm arguing with somebody, I am well thought out in my political stances. Well thought out. And this is why I'm well thought out. Because if somebody challenges my belief on something, I may get mad and I may lash out, but I will literally sit down 2 days, 3 days, a week.
And dude, how do you think I became a Republican?
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The person called me an idiot.
You can plant seeds in people. Usually it doesn't happen right then and there, but you might plant a seed in someone's mind, and then over time they'll start to switch. And I think it's crazy if things have gotten in the last few years. There's probably quite a few moderate Democrats, independents that are like, oh my God, these leftist people, they're crazy. Like, they're taking us now, this is insane.
And the other thing is, and I take this as kind of a self-validation, is the frustration I have with the Republican Party means I didn't just leave the fruit of this side, the bullshit of this side, and jump to the bullshit of this side.
I'm just as angry with the bullshit.
There is
so this whole exercise has created a better thought process in me to be able to see and not get caught up in the bias of right or left, or
I think
or
that's that a psyop in itself. The whole right, yeah. The whole 100%.
Yeah, that's what yeah. It's a polarization of ideas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When in all reality,
there is a uniparty.
There is a uniparty. Mm-hmm. Number one, but we all, it's us three sitting at this table, we have different ideas and different views on different topics. We're not going to come to 100% consensus on every topic that we discuss. There's no way. If we do,
yeah.
Y'all are brilliant motherfuckers because you agree with So with that being said, man, we're a little over time here, man. Thanks to Dr. Wesley Ingram, our unpaid climatologist and geologist, for coming on to the program today. And I know we didn't talk a lot about climate and stuff, but I think we had a really good discussion. But thank you so much for coming on. How can people follow you on Rumble and get in touch with you to bitch at you about your views?
And sure. You're on X too, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I got on X now. So I'm on X now, and that's where I'm getting more traffic and gaining some followers. Haven't been doing it that long, but I'm Carbon Cow, which is a troll against, you know, cows being bad.
That's right,
why,
yeah, yeah.
That's no. why I called myself
Carbon Cow.
No. Carbon Cow, I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm Carbon Cow. And then on Rumble is just Carbon Psyops, where I do more longer format. And that has some educational stuff on there if you want to dig into the weeds on some of the climate stuff. I've got some videos on there. But X is for more if you just want to reach
short
out.
Short-term, yeah. Short attention span theater yeah. kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. But you can reach me there on X as Carbon Cow. Yep.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, for Dr. Wesley Ingram and my buddy Dan Matichichu over here, I am your Uncle Wes, and we will see you next time on the Driveway Liberty Podcast.